This is episode 010 of The Bad Apples. The Bad Apples is a group of hardcore Mac users, and this is the place that we meet every week to talk about cool Mac apps, Mac hacks, and really weird Unix stuff that you can try out on your Macintosh. If you're an old school Apple user, you're in the right place. Stick around, you'll learn something. If you're a newbie to Apple, be very careful. This could be intense. Some programs out there that whenever I get a new computer, I always load them up. It's kind of like my own personalized distribution of Mac OS X. There are certain programs that I think should just be on every computer. One of them is VLC Player, which is at videoland.org, and another is Audacity, which is a free audio editing software that is great for manipulating raw sound waves and importing and exporting all kinds of audio. It's been ported over to all the major operating systems, so it's something that certainly I can use on either my Macs or my Linux book, and it's the same in both environments. It's powerful and it's open source, so people are writing new plugins for it all the time, and it supports all the major file formats. It's not an extremely robust editor in the way that, for instance, Logic Pro or Pro Tools can sequence and compose and mix music. It's really more like a dedicated sound wave editor. So it's going to be the most useful and the most powerful when you're going into sound files and removing clicks and pops and stutters, stammers, audio breaks, and so on. So this is how Audacity can really make your GarageBand comparable to Soundtrack Pro, for instance. If you're doing video work or podcasting work and you require some more robust editing tools than what GarageBand or just the standard Soundtrack provide, you don't have to go and break your back trying to get a whole new program to learn and spend money on. You can send the offending sound file out to Audacity, you can touch it up there, and send it back to GarageBand and continue working. It's not completely integrated. I made it sound like it's almost a plugin, but it's something that you can do, and it's for free, and Audacity is really powerful and really clean to use. The other thing I use it for a lot is digitizing vinyls. Audacity will handle these beautifully. And I'm of the school of thought that pop and noise removal in vinyl transfers defeats the purpose of taking sound from a vinyl. If you're looking for that vinyl sound, I think some of that surface noise is kind of what you're looking for. So I don't do too much pop removal myself, but it can be done easily within Audacity. And if you need to do any splicing of sounds together, you can do that here too. And I do that a lot, where I'm importing just an entire side A of a vinyl and then going and splitting it up into separate sound tracks, or I'm removing maybe the very beginning or the very end of the recording, or maybe I'm getting rid of a really bad skip that might have, you know, if it's causing skipping on the record, you can typically, sometimes, you can get rid of that skip and just kind of splice the sound back together. That's the kind of thing this is really good for. Now, it is an open source program, so there are some files that we call dependencies, that is, files that Audacity will need installed on your computer in order for it to run smoothly. But that they don't come with Audacity because they weren't made by the same person. So you have to go out and find that file and install it separately. In the commercial software world, we're all used to clicking on the installer and it installs everything for you, and that's pretty much all the thinking you have to do, and that's great. But with free stuff, sometimes you have to take care of that extra step on your own. But it's easy. That's the good news. It's very easy. The one that I'm thinking of, and it's really the only one I've run into so far, is Lame Lib. Lame Lib is a little library file that Audacity is going to need when you go to export sound as an MP3. AIF, that is uncompressed audio, it can export automatically, no extra steps. But if you want to encode as an MP3, then you're going to need to get Lame Lib. So after you've installed Audacity, it will behoove you to run over sourceforge.net and download Lame Lib as well. It's less than a megabyte, and once you've downloaded it, you can just drop it into your Audacity folder for safekeeping, keep it all together. And then the first time, and only the first time, that you tell Audacity to export something as an MPEG-3, it's going to ask you where Lame Lib is. So point it toward the Lame Lib file that you've downloaded and placed into its folder, and from then on it'll be a seamless export to MP3. It's super easy, not a problem, and it's a really good intro, I think, to doing a little bit more of hacking together on your own. At some point, you've got to step outside of prepackaged installers, and you've got to do a little bit of work on your own, I think. It's good practice. Conversely, by the way, Audacity exports to OGG format without requiring any extra files. And that's the difference between open source, free software, and proprietary stuff like MPEG-3. But I digress. Or do I? Well, anyway, go download Audacity if it's something that you think you would use, and enjoy. Okay, that music means it's time for a coffee break, so drop whatever you're doing and go get a nice hot cup of coffee and meet me back here for the rest of the show.
Coffee? On the mess deck. Say half an hour.
Hey, do you remember that scene in 2001 where Bowman and Poole seal themselves in the escape pod and start talking about their concerns about HAL 9000? And it turns out that HAL is actually watching them and reading their lips. Well, did you ever look at your MacBook's EyeSight camera and get a funny feeling about it? Well, you know, the camera is an input device, and as far as I can find, there isn't an off switch for it. Sure, you could put something over it, like your thumb, or a piece of tape, if you wanted, but, you know, what about parents who want to make sure that their children aren't on iChat with people whose intentions are probably less than pure? My point is, you know, you at least need to know how the camera works and how it's controlled in order for you to be smarter than it. So, actually, it's pretty simple. You can turn it off. There's a component that enables QuickTime. It handles all of the video for Mac OS, digitizes the camera's input also. So we find that component, move it out of its default location, and the camera is disabled. So here's how to find the component. Go to your hard drive. So that's outside of your user folder. Just your plain old hard drive. Your root folder if you're a Unix geek. Now move to your library. Go to the QuickTime folder and look for the file named QuickTime USB VDC Digitizer.component. It's only on Intel Macs with the built-in EyeSight. There may be a component installed with external EyeSights too, but you know that's an easy fix. You just unplug it. But back to our QuickTime component. So if you move this file into another folder somewhere, the EyeSight won't be able to utilize it. Can't find it. It's not there. It only looks in one place for it. Ain't there? Doesn't use it. So for maximum security, you may want to zip it up into some other name, an archive file, and put it somewhere that you remember. And actually, that's your department, I think, more than mine.
Well, sure. I mean, I think what you did was fine, too. But, I mean, if you want to do what you just did in the terminal and maybe make, like, an invisible folder to put this into so that people can't find it as easily, you would type in CD, that's change directory, space, /system/library/QuickTime, that's capital letters at the front of each of those words. You'd hit return, and then you'd say LS, so that lists all of the things in the folder. You would see the QuickTime USB, I'm seeing it here, VDC digitizer.component. So then what you would do is sudo, sudo, space mv, that's for move, mv, space QuickTime USB VDC digitizer.component, space /.disabled. You may need to enter your administrator password here, and I'm just calling the invisible folder that we're making disabled. You can call it anything. As long as there's a period in front of it, that makes it invisible. And then you can cd forward slash take you back to your root folder, and then sudo ls, that's sudo space ls, enter your administrator password, and that should show you all of your folders, including the invisible ones, namely your .disabled directory with the component inside of it. And you can type in cd forward slash dot disabled to see the file itself.
So, now to re-enable the iSight, all you've got to do is grab that file from wherever you stashed it, put it back into the system library QuickTime folder, and you're back in business. And that's my cool Mac hack for this week. Klaatu, I think you're up.
You know what?
What?
To be honest, I don't have a cool terminal line command for the week.
No special hack? No command line cleverness? No digital dancing on a keyboard to confound already confused coders?
I'm ashamed. I was thinking, you know, maybe I could do some basic line commands for people who've just never opened the terminal or something like that, but there's so many tutorials for that online. You know, one of the best places for that kind of tutorial is actually linux.org.
Oh, really?
Just go to linux.org. They have a great beginner's course in Linux. And, of course, BSD is so close to Linux that pretty much, yeah, everything in that, certainly in the beginning tutorial, will apply. And they even have an intermediate one as well, so you could do that. That's where I learned, you know, a lot of the stuff that I know, or, you know, it got me started on the terminal, using the terminal every day, that kind of thing. That would be my tip for the week, I guess. But what we could do this week, actually, I could do something cool. There's, everyone thinks about Next Step, and everyone asks and wonders, you know, just how much influence did Next Step have on Mac OS X? And everyone knows by now, of course, that Next Step was bought by Apple Computers Inc. And it is seen as the precursor of Mac OS X. Because the basis in Unix, I mean, that's an obvious similarity, but, and it all stems from the BSD flavor of Unix. And I guess the BSD tradition of Unix started, I guess it was about 1978, BSD arose. And from BSD, Next Step evolved, or I should say it was an offshoot of BSD, because BSD continues in a couple of different flavors today. There's OpenBSD, NetBSD, FreeBSD, things like that. So, but Next Step was directly from BSD, and if you poke around in the terminal, you'll find all kinds of little references to Next. Even some of the services in the programming of individual Apple apps refer back to Next. All the services starting with NS actually stand for Next Step. And those are just services that you're not going to really see. It's more of a core service. And then, of course, there's the entire kernel upon which Mac OS X is based, which is pure Next work. It's the mock kernel, and that was developed by Next for the OS that they used, which was Next Step. And frankly, what would Mac OS X be without that? I mean, it wouldn't exist. it would be something entirely different. And it almost was, actually, historically speaking. There was another person who had come from Apple and developed an OS called BOS, and Apple was in negotiation to buy that, so it could have completely been something different. But let's delve in and try to find some solid reference to Next. This is not a tip, it's just something fun. So you first open your terminal, type in man defaults. That's man space defaults. So this brings up the man page for defaults. And a man page, in case you don't know, is the Unix term for a manual. So it's a man page, that's what we call it. They are, unfortunately, they're not really tutorials. They're really pretty technical, usually. But we're not going to read it. Just scroll down until you can't scroll anymore with your arrow key. Take a look at that last line. It's telling you that the defaults system in Mac OS X, which controls the user defaults for things like your display font, placement of arrows at the ends of the scroll bars, minimizing effects of windows, things like that, was first implemented in, yes, there it is, black and white, Next Step. So there you go. Useless, but neat to see. And feel free to look around for more. Happy hunting.
Help stamp out Quacker.
Windows must go. No one loves Windows, although the average computer user out there does love familiarity. That's why it's a firm belief of mine that switching to Mac is not the answer for the entire world. Let's face it, if everyone switched to Macintosh, then Apple would have to start mass-producing Macs to make up for the whole host of PC companies that used to be manufacturing great portion of the computers in the world. There's Acer, Sony, Toshiba, IBM, Lenovo, Compaq, HP, Alienware, all of them would have to be replaced with Apples. A frightening thought to me, because that much production would obviously result ultimately in lower quality. And then, of course, what would we have? We'd have a monopoly of Mac OS, and I don't care much for that idea either. No, for the 95% or whatever the number is of computer users right now to get away from Microsoft Windows, Mac OS isn't the answer for all of them. For some of those people, it's Linux. And I do mean Linux. Because Linux can be made to mimic Windows as closely as the average computer user needs it to do, so that the user can sit down and without adjusting to any change, just start working and getting their work done. The fact is, you'd be amazed at how little the average user is cognizant of what their system is doing. It doesn't even matter that much if the start menu doesn't say start. You know, as long as there's a green button down in the left corner of the screen, they'll hit it and they'll start working. The fact that their Office application doesn't say MS Office isn't something they're really going to notice. It's a question of where they go with their cursor to create a certain action and whether or not the expected result occurs. And in this way, a Windows XP environment can easily be created, and in fact already has been, sometimes in a really indistinguishable way. The surface is XP to the user, and the internals are Linux for the admin. True story, Cuba recently got rid of all Windows products in the government institutions, and they're now using a distribution of an XP-looking Linux. I think they're calling it Linux XP. Something similar is going on in Brazil or some other South American country. And again, I think they're calling it Linux XP. It's identical to XP, and I think that it's probably not slowing many people down at all. Because what are they doing with those computers? They're just going down to the start menu, opening up their Office menu or their Office suite, and they're doing their word processing or spreadsheet or email. So is Linux the Windows killer? Yes. Actually, I think so. And eventually, many of these average users may want to try a different window manager. They start out on Linux XP with whatever form of fake XP they've come up with, and maybe they're going to try something a little bit more progressive, like Enlightenment, or, dare I say, the great BSD distro, Mac OS X. This has been episode 010 of The Bad Apples. For show notes and information about other episodes, go to thebadapples.5gbfree.com. That is thebadapples.5gbfree.com. If you want to email us at gort.klatu@gmail.com. That is gort, G-O-R-T, dot Klaatu, K-L-A-A-T-U, @gmail.com. Music for this show has been provided by Fat Chance Lester, a legendary, super progressive rock band from New York. who of course are all dead in a tragic UFO crash. Tune in next time for more Mac hacks, Mac apps, and really weird Unix stuff that you can do to your Mac.
His hands were dirty, and his hair was messy.